Why is Puma named Puma?
So it falls from the mongrel family of web surfers, and so, you know, we already have unicorn, and I kind of felt like, okay, well, it should be some kind of animal or something like that, and I don't know, I guess I was like, oh, I like cats, so I'll do some kind of a cool cat, and I honestly just was like going through them like, oh, that sounds good, and then later on do I realize like, oh, but I wear a lot of Puma shoes, so maybe think of people I'm named after my shoes, but it's not. It just seemed like a good, and I knew that you could make a good logo out of it, so it was short for typing. You know, it's got all the things that you want in a Unix command.
But it really, at its core, is because you like cats better than dogs.
I didn't say that.
So I'm Shane Becker. I'm with Evan Phoenix today, the Farmhouse Podcast. We're talking about Puma, the web server that he wrote, and some other things. This episode is sponsored by Code Climate. We'll talk about that more later. Tell me about Puma. What is it? I know nothing about web servers. What is Puma, and why should I care?
You know nothing about web servers? I find that hard to believe.
What's a web server?
Okay, so there's this thing called the web. So let me take you back. So this guy named Tim Berners-Lee.
Sir Tim Berners-Lee.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, I don't speak the Queen's English. I don't call him sir.
He's a knight.
He is a knight. He only comes out at night?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's like Batman.
Yeah. So there are these programs that serve out HTTP requests. Do we have to go over HTTP as well, or should we just skip that?
We'll hand wave that. That's on episode some other time.
Can we just put a link to the HTTP spec?
We'll put the
RFCs? Okay.
Yeah. And if podcast listeners...
So we go back and read the RFCs before continuing. Don't worry, I'll wait. Okay, welcome back. So, why another one? Okay, so while working on Rubinius, I realized that I wanted a web server that was... Well, most of the web servers were designed for MRI. So they're designed for, like, a lot of them. Mongrel, especially, was designed for Ruby 1.8. So it was designed for green threads. And Zed had done a lot of tuning specifically for Ruby 1.8 at the time. I wanted one that was specifically tuned for Rubinius, knowing that, like, okay, well, you don't have a gil. You've got threads that you can use all the time. And so what would that look like? And I decided, originally just as a spike, to just start that project. Let's just take what is Mongrel. Mongrel's got a really great, which everybody reuses because that's a sort of testament to how good it is, a really good parser. So I took the parser out of there and then just started slowly rewriting the pieces and going through and profiling it and saying, where are the parts that made sense, where are the parts that didn't make sense anymore. Mongrel is also written in a time pre-rack. And so it's got its own plugins, it's got its own things, which people don't generally use anymore. So it was a lot of like, well, let's just go back and we'll clean up Mongrel, we'll make it more modern at the same time, and then tune it for specifically for Rubinius, for threads and threading and all that kind of stuff.
And you mean Mongrel 1, not the Mongrel 2?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Mongrel 1, specifically the original Ruby web server, Mongrel. Yeah. And so that's kind of how it started. You know, It was a fun project. It's nicely scoped, you know. It's just a web server. You know, I wanted to do web serving. And so Rubinius is a very big project. I have a lot of other really big projects, whereas Puma is a nice little project. I know exactly what things I want to provide inside of it, so it's good for my state of mind. It's easy to release on and that kind of thing. So,
what is the state of Puma's mind? What is it right now?
Okay, so we have 1.6.3 out now, which has a number of has been going along the same original lines that the spike went along. And then currently the Git master is Puma 2. There's actually a 2.0.0.B1 beta for 2.0. And the idea for 2.0 is to add some things in that will make Puma more attractive for slightly larger deployments. So originally it was written like, oh, it'd be a nice little web server, you could use it for little things, and people have kind of expressed an interest in using it for bigger things, so I've kind of thought about that. So specifically, it has the ability to, you can say not just how many threads you want, but how many actual processes you want as well. And the idea being there is that, so for like, say, Ruby 1.9, where that still has a GIL, a lot of times if you're writing like an API server is a good example here. An API server a lot of times is going to be, you're going to block a lot on I/O waiting for Redis or MySQL or whatever it is to get your data. So you actually do good by having threads because you have a request waiting for some external I/O anyway. Well, if you add this new workers model, you can basically say like, oh, well, I've got 4 cores in this server, 8 cores, whatever it be. And you can say, oh, give me 8 for whatever workers, and then it works sort of like Unicorn. It will make processes, and then it will distribute the requests amongst those processes, but then you have threads within them. And so the idea being there that you can still get sort of simultaneous requests, you can get simultaneous request handling, but you still scale much better because in terms of memory, because you're using threads and so that's the idea.
Do you have a timetable for 2.0's release?
I mean, the beta is out now. I've been working on like bugs here and there. I mean, probably within the next couple weeks. I mean, it's the core of the work is already done, so it's been sort of like looking for places where it's falling down, places that it breaks where 1.163 doesn't break, that kind of thing. So it's pretty close.
Does 2.0 already work with in all the places that 1.6 would?
Like, yeah.
Heroku, et cetera.
Yeah, it totally works in all the places that 1.6 works. Yeah.
What is the process to get using Puma in development and in production?
In development, I mean, it's built specifically to be a rack server, rack compatible web server. So, if you want to use it in, if you want to use it in development, it's easy to add. Like if you're on a Rails app, you can add it to your gem file, and then when you go into the directory, you can do Rails server. You can say Rails space server, and you can specify a web server there. I think you say, I forget exactly what it is.
Dash S.
There's another one. You can say which particular web server you want, so it doesn't use Webbrick.
Right.
Anyway, that you guys can look that up. You guys probably know better than I do. But you can also just type Puma in that case, because it comes with a command line that basically automatically looks for a config.ru file. So you can always just type Puma, and it will load up the rack environment, which will launch all of Rails and all that kind of stuff. So that's an easy way to do it in development. The production, and this is something I'm fixing in 2.0. Originally, I was opposed. So the way that you run 1.6.3 in production is actually a little bit complicated. So if you want to use like a standard Capistrano recipes, it's a little bit difficult because you have to Puma by the 1.6.3 branch. I didn't want to have the ability for it to put itself in the background to daemonize itself. So you had to go onto the server and you had to like use monit or run it or something in order to set it up, and then your Capistrano recipes would just sort of restart it. In 2.0, I have added a daemonize option, so you can use your Capistrano recipes, the same ones you would use for Unicorn for deploying it, which is generally you do a Unicorn restart, you do a Puma restart, Puma start, and you do dash D, and then it will go off in the background and run, and that works generally everywhere that a Capistrano deployment would work. It should work fine. You wouldn't use the dash D, if you used like a Heroku Cedar stack. I think those one they want them to run in the foreground, so you wouldn't data.
Yeah, so on the Cedar stack on Heroku, you have 2 one-liners you need to do. In your gem file, you add Puma to your production group, and then in your proc file, you add a one-liner that's web. And I'll put this in the show notes: /web:/exec/puma-p $port.
Yeah.
Port.
Yeah.
And then it just works.
Yeah. And obviously, if you want to have a separate, if you want to have a different rack, like if you have a specific rack file, rackup config that you want to run there, you would just put that as an extra option onto Puma. It picks up config.ru as the default if you don't specify one.
Okay. Let me talk about our sponsor. So, do you know about Code Climate, Evan?
I do know about Code Climate.
Have you ever used it?
I've talked with Brian about it before, and I've gone on it. I think some code I've written has been on Code Climate before, but I have not had the opportunity to use it yet myself.
Okay. Brian Helmkamp, a friend of ours, runs a company called Code Climate, and he was generous enough to sponsor this episode. Thanks to him and Code Climate for doing that. He sent me a short paragraph to read here to better describe what Code Climate is for you. If you're feeling pain from the technical debt of your Rails projects, Code Climate can help. Automated code reviews and alerts provide actionable data that helps your team ship quality code faster. After each Git commit, it notifies you of new quality issues and improvements via Campfire email to RSS. You can try it for free for 14 days, or if you are an open source project, you can try it or use it for free forever, and you can find it at codeclimate.com. So thanks, Brian.
Obviously, I didn't put Puma up there. I don't know why I haven't.
Yeah, get on.
Yeah. Brian, look at my code.
There you go. So Brian, you've got another open source customer, we'll say.
Yeah. User, I guess. Yeah.
So what else about, is there anything else about Puma you want to talk about? Anything we're not, like common questions people are like?
Well, I think, you know, when people ask me how to use it, how to do the production deployment, and I don't think we don't have enough docs about that. You know, we're trying to get better on that. I was going to have some built-in Capistrano tasks that you can, so in your cap file, you can require Puma slash Capistrano, and it will bring those tasks in for you. We're trying to, 2.0 is going to be sort of easier to deploy. That's the general idea, and that's mostly where the questions come from. I think that's about it, though.
And if somebody wanted to plug in and, like, contribute,
yeah.
where do you need help? What's the best way to do that?
I think that generally, it's a pretty small project, which is nice, you know, so I think people looking around, like, there's a few feature requests in the GitHub issues that you can look through, you know, otherwise there's some bugs in the GitHub issues that are always useful. I always like people to, I mean, the best way I think always, this is how I always add features to other projects, which is, I just start using it for a while and I realize, oh, it doesn't do this thing, wouldn't it be really great? And I kind of go off and do it. So generally, I always think the easiest way to figure out how to contribute is to use the thing for a little while and then find out what the pain points are and help solve those. So,
yeah, you are EvanPHX on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You are, what is a sort of public email people can use for you?
And you can use evan@phx.io. That's fine.
And Puma's GitHub is /Puma/Puma, or mm-hmm. the org is just github.com/Puma. Take that, shoe company.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, also on there, the main website is also up there, which is great because I get pull requests to like update version number or update whatever. So I'm always looking for contributions to the website as well. The other question I get is, what benchmark did you use to generate the graphs on the website? Which I have, and I had, and I don't think I have it anymore. I need to regenerate it. But I think what we're probably going to do is go through and do another round of adding the benchmarks in there and running them and putting up those results and stuff like that. So coming soon to a website near you, those things.
And that website is puma.io, and it was beautifully designed by Jordan Issip.
He's awesome.
Old friend of ours from Seattle RB, who I think is now New York.
Really?
Yeah. He also did the logo and the whole thing. I think, what is Leia's thing called? The DevSwag?
Yeah.
So if you want Puma stickers, are there shirts or just stickers?
I think it's just stickers. Okay. I think that's what we talked about originally.
I'll live check this. DevSwag.com is Leia Silver's joint to, you know, basically if you want stickers, etc., and some shirts of some cool open source projects. Puma's on there, Rubinius, Ember, jQuery, etc. You should check that out. Get some Puma stickers for your laptop and water bottles. So you mentioned Rubinius. We won't do the full like Rubinius podcast here, but you know, give the sort of elevator pitch of Rubinius, what it is.
Yeah. So I mean, Rubinius is another Ruby implementation that started many years ago with the idea of trying to write as much of it in Ruby as we could, both for it's easier to write, it's easier to maintain, it's easier to extend. And we additionally look to it to try and say, you know, if we could make this Ruby code that we use to implement Ruby fast, then we can make all Ruby code fast. And that's been one of our sort of core principles, sort of eating your own dog food, about how we have to use Ruby, we have to make this fast in order to make just running normal Ruby code fast. So that's the sort of the general elevator pitch.
So that was the underlying design principle. How has that played out in the past? Was it 5 years now?
Yeah, at least 5 years now.
Okay.
So you
first did one that was fully in Ruby. And that was
the first version was just totally in Ruby. It was written, I think Ruby 1.8.2 was out then, maybe 1.8.1. And it was completely, it just ran on top of there. It used Ryan Davis's Ruby inline to like access raw memory. And it's actually still in the repository if you go back far enough.
And it's called Sydney?
No, it didn't really have a name.
What was Sydney? Was that part of this?
Yeah, so that came later.
Okay.
I'll go back. It was before that. Well, it's sort of concurrent with that thing. So Sydney was this thing where people had always said, oh, well, it would be really awesome if Ruby had native threads, but they're too hard. And I don't really like it when people say it's too hard and don't give me a reason. So I actually went off and tried to, like, in my spare time, just say, well, let's see if I can add native threads to 1.8 at the time. This is, like I said, 2005, maybe? Yeah. And so I started working on it, and 10,000 line diff later, I realized, like, oh, it is impossible. So it was just like, you know, I got really used to the code base, and I learned a lot about, like, how the interpreter's written and all that kind of stuff, but it was sort of a dead end. So that was Sydney.
And this was all trying to bolt native threads onto MRI.
Yeah, yeah. And then, when that finished, because I decided it was a dead end, I didn't work on anything for a little while. And then I decided, like, well, what if we started over? Like, rather than, if MRI is a dead end, or Sydney is a dead end, because there's too many assumptions about how it's supposed to work inside that code base, if we started over, we could fix the assumptions, we could set them from the get-go. And so the very first version of Rubinius was the one that was all written in Ruby. I guess that came right after Sydney, I guess. And then following that, I was going to give a presentation at RubyConf. 2006, and I only had the Ruby version, and I decided, like, oh my gosh, it's so slow. I'm going to make a big fool out of myself because I got accepted to talk about this thing, but it's incredibly slow. So I started hand translating it into C, and so that was actually a version called Shotgun. That was that first version that was in C. So,
and even that version was some C, some Ruby.
Yeah, the VM was in C. And then, like, sort of these primitive operations, like, you know, fixed num plus, fixed num minus, all that kind of stuff was in C.
And then
like array and all that kind of stuff was all in Ruby.
And then, what is the state of Rubinius these days?
So it's humming along. We're still working on 2.0, which is going to add 1.9 support. That's kind of why it's taken as long as it has. No gil. Just kind of the whole reason for Puma. So in other words, you're going to be able to, you've got 8 cores and you use 8 threads inside Rubinius, you can use 800% of your CPU. And 1.9 support. So we're still moving along on it. You know, it's taken a while because the encoding support in 1.9 is very complicated. So it's taken its time, but we're getting there.
And you don't have any tea leaves projections on...
I don't. I mean, I've given them before, but we've always missed them at this point. It's just, you know, as we get into the encoding stuff, it's sort of like we hit one thing, and then we hit another thing, and we hit another thing. At this point, it's sort of like, well, we should just, if we've already delayed it as long as we have, shouldn't we just sort of get 1.9 right, get it straight, and then release it? So that's, I don't have any tea leaf projections now.
And what is left in 2.0 to ship?
And the transcoding is the big stuff. There's still some missing 1.9 methods. That's a lot of the stuff, you know, like there's some pie in the sky things. Like I've wanted to rewrite the IO. It's not as fast as it could be. But that doesn't happen to have to happen.
That could wait till 2.1 or something.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to help, encodings is probably hard and the missing methods is probably easier.
Yeah. I mean, you can jump in. Yeah. I mean, you could certainly go through and run the specs without the, the tagged ones. So in other words, say, like, show me all the failing ones and see which ones are missing because we don't have that method. Or a lot of changes in 1.9 where the methods are there, but now they take, like, an optional hash that has a bunch of options in it or something like that that we don't have implemented yet.
And I forgot to ask this in the Puma segment. Puma was built to really, like, show off Rubinius, right? So
yeah.
Does it run on 1.8, 1.9,
yeah.
JRuby?
Yeah, I mean, it runs fine on all those. I mean, I'm not ignoring those other targets because people want those, and I think it's nice to be able to run on them. So it just is not as well tuned necessarily for all of them. But it, you know, I have been running it on 1.9 a lot lately, and it's been running great. And so I won't ignore them. I won't not tune for them. But I just if sort of comes down as should I take option A, B, or C, and the C is the best one for Rubinius, that's the one I would take. There aren't a lot of those cases, I should note. It's.
Okay. Evan at phx.io, @EvanPhx on Twitter.
Yep.
EvanPhx on GitHub.
Yep.
Rubinius is spelled Rubinius.
Yep.
Which is rubini.us or Rubinius on GitHub and Twitter. Puma.io and Puma on GitHub. Puma on Twitter is GoPumaGo.
Mm-hmm.
And devswag.com for Puma and Rubinius stickers. Is that it?
Yep.
So thanks again to Brian Helmkamp for sponsoring this episode. Go check out codeclimate.com and try it for free for 14 days. And see you next time. Bye.
Bye.